Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of October 4th, 2020. We will begin, as we have been doing, with the latest press releases from the local public health departments. First, from the Ford County Public Health Department, and this is current as of October 8th, 2020. There have been a total of 176 cases, which is an increase of 12 from our last week's reading, and of those 12, one was a student at PBL High School. There have been a total of 5,400 tests administered in Ford County. Of the 176 cases, 151 have been released from isolation, 17 are currently in home isolation, 3 are hospitalized, and 5 have passed away. 56% of the cases have been female, 44% male. Breaking down the cases by age, 24 cases under the age of 20, 31 the ages between the ages of 20 and 29, 24 between the ages of 30 and 39, 24 between the ages of 40 and 49, 17 between the ages of 50 and 59, 23 between 60 and 69, 13 between 70 and 79, 15 between 80 and 89, and 5 or over 90. And from the Iroquois County Public Health Department, and this data is current as of 10-8-2020, there have been a total of 427 cases, which is an increase of 21 since our last reading. 383 are confirmed cases, 44 are probable cases, 382 have been released, and 24 are currently in home isolation, 2 have been hospitalized, and 19 are deceased. Females make up 55.7% of the cases, males 44.3%. There have been a total of 12,161 test results in Iroquois County. 11,734 of those were negatives, 383 laboratory confirmed positive results, total probable positive results 44, and the positivity rate of 3.1%. Turning now to news from the Ford County Public Health Department, a story in the Record entitled Ford County Public Health Department Emphasizes Importance of Getting Flu Shots. Ford County. This year it is more important than ever to get a flu shot. Each season, millions of Americans are sickened with flu, hundreds of thousands are hospitalized, and tens of thousands die. This season, we are also battling COVID-19, another virus that can cause severe respiratory illness. While a vaccine for COVID-19 is still under development, there is a vaccine for flu that has been proven to be safe and effective over the past 50 years. Getting a flu vaccine can help you avoid co-infection with COVID-19 and the flu. Public health officials recommend everyone 6 months of age and older get the seasonal flu vaccine. In addition to getting your flu vaccine, Ford County Public Health Department recommends the following 3 W's for COVID-19 and influenza. Wash your hands, watch your distance, wear your mask. Many of the symptoms of flu and COVID-19 are the same, such as fever and cough, but there are some differences. If you have symptoms of either flu or COVID-19, self-isolate and contact a healthcare provider. They can talk with you about the testing and other measures you should be taking. Your best protection against the flu is the flu vaccine. Please get yours today and avoid co-infection with COVID-19. Ford County Public Health Department is now offering the flu vaccine. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, Ford County Public Health Department is offering the vaccine by appointment or drive-through flu clinics. The following drive-through flu clinics have been scheduled. Tuesday, October 8, 2020, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the American Evangelical Lutheran Church on 905 East 1st Street in Gibson City. Drive-up and other office appointments are being scheduled at the Ford County Public Health Department in Paxton by calling 217-9281. Additional clinic days will be added and released when secured. Please contact Ford County Public Health Department with questions, concerns, or to schedule an appointment at 217-379-9281. Let the Public Health Department 235 North Taft Street in Paxton. Now, in other news, Hoopston man charged in alleged attack on brother, Paxton. A Hoopston man remained Friday at the Ford County Jail on a Class X felony charges alleging he barged into his brother's home in Melbourne and attacked him. Harrington W. Mathern, Jr., 48, who listed an address at the 800 block of East Orange Street in Hoopston, was arrested at the Hoopston Police Department around 1:15 a.m. September 24th, several hours after the alleged incident took place at 210 West Main Street in Melbourne. Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian filed two counts of home invasion in Ford County Circuit Court against Mathern, who faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 6 to 30 years in prison upon conviction for each count. Mathern has pleaded not guilty. Mathern's bond was set at $250,000, which means he must pay $25,000 to be released from jail. On Friday, Mathern's attorney, Lance Cagle, filed a motion in Ford County Circuit Court to lower the bond. In his motion, Cagle noted that his client is not a flight risk, as he is married, has a daughter who is disabled, and has lived in the area his entire life. A hearing on Cagle's motion was not immediately scheduled. According to the charges filed by Killian, Mathern allegedly entered the home and struck his younger brother with his fist while holding car keys. Ford County Sheriff's Deputy Justin Rizzula said in an affidavit filed in court that around 6:37 p.m. September 23rd, he was called to investigate a report from a passerby that they had seen a man beating up a vehicle with a pipe outside the home in Melbourne where Mathern's brother lives. The witness said the man then left in a dark-colored vehicle. When Rashulda arrived at the home, he spoke with the brother, who said that Mathern had barged in, began an argument, and then attacked him while clutching something in his fist, possibly screws or nails. Mathern then damaged the vehicle outside before leaving, his brother said. The brother, who had a 2-inch cut on his shoulder area, refused medical treatment. Later that night, sheriff's deputies were informed that Mathern was in Hoopston. Hoopston police then made contact with Mathern and brought him to the police department for questioning. According to Rajula, Mathern said he went to his brother's home looking for his son, he said, and knocked on the door and was then attacked by his brother. Mathern said his brother attacked him with a curtain rod. Mathern said he was holding car keys in his own hand during the fight. Meanwhile, Mathern denied damaging the vehicle. Rashula said Mathern had a red mark above his right eye. Now the latest chapter in another long-running story. B&B continues to fight penalties for discriminating against gay couple. Paxton. It has been nearly a year since the Timber Creek Bed and Breakfast west of Paxton was ordered by a judge in Ford County Circuit Court to pay more than $80,000 in civil penalties for discriminating against a same-sex couple in 2011. Yet the B&B's co-owner, Jim Walder, still has not paid the fines, not the $30,000 owed to Todd and Mark Wathen of Tuscola for the emotional distress they suffered, nor the $50,000 in fees owed to their attorneys. "We have not paid anything," Walder told the Ford County Chronicle last week, "because we have not been served with papers asking us to pay anything." The B&B has also not allowed the couple access to the B&B for a ceremony celebrating their civil union. That was also a requirement of the judge's order, despite the Walthens having already gotten married elsewhere after Walder refused to host their previously planned civil union ceremony at the B&B 9 years ago. "We cannot host gay weddings or civil unions," Walder told the Chronicle. "Our convictions will not allow it." Walder, whose B&B is described on its website as an upscale Christian country B&B, has complied with zero of the sanctions ordered last December by Associate Judge Robert Travers. Rather, Walder has continued to fight the penalties which were originally imposed in 2016 by the Illinois Human Rights Commission. On Monday, September 28th, Walder's attorney, Jason Craddock of Suburban Oakbrook, told the Chronicle that he had submitted a petition for rehearing in the Illinois Appellate Court, 4th District, earlier that same day, seeking reconsideration of the BNB's latest appeal of the sanctions. The petition was submitted but not yet filed in the Appellate Court Clerk's office as of Thursday, October 1st, a clerk in the Appellate Clerk office confirmed. Craddock all said he also will be seeking to consolidate this case with the original case in the Illinois Supreme Court, especially in light of changes in the law from the United States Supreme Court in recent years. The Human Rights Commission determined that in 2016 that the BNB discriminated against the Waltons based on their sexual orientation when Walter refused to allow their civil union ceremony at his facility. In denying the Waltons' request, Walter wrote an email to them citing various biblical verses and denouncing homosexuality as wrong and unnatural. Ever since then, Craddock has unsuccessfully tried to appeal the commission's decision, first through the state appellate court, then the Illinois Supreme Court, then again through the state appellate court following Travers' December 2019 ruling in Ford County Circuit Court. On August 12th, the appellate court dismissed the BNB's latest appeal. The appeal was filed last January, about a month after Travers ordered the BNB to comply with the sanctions as requested in a lawsuit filed by the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Illinois Department of Human Rights. The appellate court's dismissal of the appeal was contributed to Craddock's failure to file an opening brief. Craddock had been given until July 20th to show good cause why his opening brief had not been filed, but failed to do so by the court's deadline. On the day of the deadline, Craddock submitted a motion seeking a stay of the proceedings, arguing the delay should be granted because, among other reasons, he was pursuing an appeal of the case to the state Supreme Court. He has been ill and was suspended from the practice of law from July 30th to August 3rd, and he has been taking care of his elderly father, who had a stroke recently. Craddock asked the court to allow a stay of this case pending the Supreme Court appeal. In response to Craddock's motion for a stay of the proceedings, Assistant Attorney General Carson Griffiths pointed out that Craddock's motion contained two inaccuracies. One, he was suspended from the practice of a law between April 3rd and July 3rd, not July 3rd and August 3rd. And two, Craddock is not appealing to the state Supreme Court as he stated he was. Griffiths said Craddock failed to timely appeal to the state Supreme Court and has not provided any evidence of a new pending appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court to support its requested stay of this appeal. On July 21st, Craddock submitted a corrected motion that included the correct dates of his suspension from the practice of law, but the corrected motion was filed after the deadline. In his petition for rehearing submitted last week, Craddock said he is seeking reinstatement of the appeal as well as a 14-day extension to file the opening brief. In his petition, Craddock cited several factors for his failure to file the brief by due date as originally requested. First, Craddock said, all litigants were granted an automatic 35 days to file extension to file briefs in appellate court cases pursuant to an Illinois Supreme Court order that went into effect March 24th. That means Craddock's opening brief should not have been due until June 5th after the deadline was imposed, he said. Craddock also said he was unable to file the opening brief by the due date because of his suspension from practicing law, which he said was due to verbal altercations with opposing counsel 4 years ago. Craddock also noted that since May, he has been taking care of his elderly father, who suffered a stroke, requiring him to spend much time in caregiving. In addition, Craddock said that he himself had been suffering from adverse health conditions, including diabetes and severe sleep apnea, which, along with his obligations in other cases, made it impossible to complete the opening brief. Craddock's suspension from practicing law in Illinois has passed, and his license is now active, according to the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission's website. Craddock's license was suspended after it was determined that, On three occasions, he directed vulgar and offensive language toward female opposing counsel in litigation matters he was handling for clients, the commission's website said. Next, a story from the Gibson City Schools. GCMS School Board approves design for new multipurpose room fitness area for elementary school. The Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District is looking to add a multipurpose room and fitness area to the elementary school, as well as renovate other areas at the elementary and high school. The school board approved the design and development plan as presented by BLDD Architects Incorporated of Champaign during a special meeting held on Monday. The plan is expected to cost somewhere in the range of $8.3 to $8.9 million, the majority of which will be paid by general obligation school bonds via a resolution passed at a school board meeting held last August. According to GCMS Superintendent Jeremy Darnell, the school district also has some existing fund balances that we're going to use as necessary. The bidding process for the construction of the project is expected to start in late December or early January. Construction of the elementary and high school roofs and additions of the multipurpose room and fitness areas is expected to take place from February to October 2021, and renovations are expected to take place from May to August of 2021. We're still redoing all the roofs, Darnell said. The question, are we going to invest extra dollars to make them all 30-year roofs, or are we going to do 20-year roofs on a portion and 30 years on another portion? Outside of the new multipurpose room, there will be translucent windows that, from the outside at night, will look like it's glowing because the lights on the inside are going to illuminate it. During the daytime, the sunlight on the outside is going to bring light inside. Darnell described the phenomenon as similar to frost on a windshield. If it's frosted, the light goes in and the light goes out, but you can't see through it, Darnell said. Inside, the multipurpose room will consist of a hard rubber floors similar to the field house at Muhammad Seymour High School. The room will consist of 6 basketball hoops and can be used for dance, marching band, volleyball, baseball, and softball. There is a divider down the middle and courts on each side. This is just like the middle school gym, Darnell said. It will also have 12 by 60 foot long batting cages and restrooms and changing rooms for physical education students. The changing rooms are not meant to house teams, Darnell said. It's meant to be for 12 to 15 kids to change for physical education. A fitness room will be attached to the multipurpose room. It will include a weight room along with some cardiovascular equipment. The weight room will replace the one in the concession stand near the football and softball fields. The weight room will be removed from the concession stand to make room for renovations, which include expanded restrooms and 5 stalls each in the men's and women's room. The elementary school library will also receive a renovation that will include new desks, a small group area, a tech counter, and a presentation area. Everything is going to be brand new. The elementary library is getting a 21st learning space renovation, Darnell said. The restrooms and locker rooms in the high school will also be renovated, and the stage at the high school gymnasium is getting new flooring, new lighting, and new curtains. And in business news from Paxton, new boutique in Paxton keeps inseparable pals together. Paxton. Ashley Nelson and Shelby Schwartz have been inseparable, as they say, ever since they met in Spanish school at Streeter High School. After graduating together in 2010, they became roommates. As they ventured into adulthood, they eventually found their own living spaces and formed their own families, but they remained best friends. We're sisters, Nelson said. Yeah, we've been inseparable for 15 years, Schwartz said. So it is only fitting that the two pals decided to go into business together. About 2 years ago, they started a business that sells women's clothing and accessories online. Ann Rose Boutique Clothing Company is the business name. The Ann is Schwartz's middle name, while the Rose is Nelson's middle name. Several months ago, they found a vacant storefront at 165 South Market Street in downtown Paxton that looked like it would make a good fit for their business's new office. They had been using a spare bedroom in Schwartz's home as their office for the better part of 2 years. Those plans changed, though, after their online customers kept encouraging them to use the new space they found in Paxton's downtown, not only as their office, but also as an actual store. It started off just asking people what they thought, if they thought it would be a good fit for Paxton, and everybody was just so excited, so we just shot the gun, Schwartz said. Last Saturday, they opened Anro's boutique at the downtown location just south of City Hall. The boutique is open every Monday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., but the hours could be expanded in the future depending on demand, they said. We sell all women's clothing sizes, small to 3X, and shoes, accessories, purses, jewelry, Schwartz said. And we do a lot of graphic tees, screen print tees. We also do custom flannels, bleach flannels, and other custom work. Anything crafty or cute you can find for sure. And added Nelson, and once in a while we have children's clothing and men's tees as well. We branch off a little bit. Every Monday and Wednesday, Nelson and Schwartz do a Facebook Live broadcast to advertise the new clothing that arrives in their store's inventory. We try on our clothing and you can see how it fits on a real live model. And then we describe it and let you know the ins and outs of it, and then we do a sale on it, Nelson said. It's just so people know how to correctly size themselves. Just because it's hard to shop online for a woman, everybody's different shapes and sizes, Schwartz said. So if they see it on us, then they say, oh, I always have to go down one size from Shelby or up one size from Shelby. And they know what size they need. The clothing can be ordered anytime at AnnRoseBoutique.com or purchased at the store when it is open. Nelson said the store gets new inventory every week. It moves fast, Schwartz said. We don't get a lot. We try usually to have less than 3 or 4 per item, so you're not walking around downtown and everybody else has the same thing as you. Nelson, who lives in Gibson City, and Schwartz, who lives in Paxton, so they believe their business is the only boutique operating in Paxton. Gibson City, meanwhile, has at least 2. We started because I'm a Mrs. size and she's a plus size, and it's kind of hard when your best friends go shopping and one has to go off to the plus section and one's got to go off to the Mrs. section. So you really don't get to shop together, Nelson said. And that's one of the things we noticed being friends, is we don't really get to shop clothes-wise together. But you can do that here. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of August 4th, 2020. Beverly Ann Lane. Beverly Ann Lane, age 82, of Tomah, Wisconsin, passed away peacefully and without pain from COVID, Monday, September 28th, 2020, at the Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Due to COVID concerns, a private service was conducted at the Torkelson Funeral Home in Tomah on October 5th. A recording of Beverly's services will be uploaded onto the Torkelson Funeral Home website for anyone unable to attend. The website address is www.torkelsonfuneralhome.com. Anna S. Yoder, Gibson City. Anna S. Yoder, 79, of Gibson City, formerly of Forest, passed away at 10:08 a.m., September 30th, 2020, surrounded by her family. Funeral services and burials will be held at a later date at the Forest Township Cemetery. Dennis Dave Wendell, Martinton. Dennis Dave Wendell, 73, of Martinton, passed away on Saturday, September 26, 2020, at North Logan Healthcare in Danville. Cremation rites will be accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Watseka, and burial will be at the Danville National Cemetery. Private military graveside rites will be provided by the Danville American Legion. Memorials may be made to the Wounded Warrior Foundation or to an organization of the donor's choice. Roger Lee Baker. Roger Lee Baker, 71, of Chevenix, passed away on Tuesday, September 29, 2020, at the Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. Cremation rites will be accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Clifton. A memorial service will be held at a later date, with burial following at Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery in Elwood. Reba J. Van Gundy, Martinton. Reba J. Van Gundy, 87, of Martinton, passed away on Tuesday, September 29, 2020, at her home. Funeral services were held Thursday, October 8th at the Emmanuel United Church of Christ in Papineau. The Reverend Craig Forwater officiated. Cremation rites will be accorded following the service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Emmanuel United Church of Christ in Papineau. John R. Turner. John R. Turner, 82, of Danville, formerly of Paxton, passed away at 1:30 p.m. Monday, October 5, 2020, at his home, surrounded by family. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 9, 2020, at Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Adam Harmon officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Mark F. Beck. Mark F. Beck, 63, of Elliott, peacefully passed away Sunday, October 4, 2020, at his home in Elliott. His graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 24, 2020, at Elliott Cemetery in Elliott. Pastor Jim Davis will be officiating. Memorial contributions can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Barbara L. Newell. Barbara L. Newell, 90, of Watsika, passed away on Sunday, October 4, 2020, at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. A memorial visitation will take place from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 10, 2020, at Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. A private internment will take place at a later date at Iroquois Memorial Park. Memorials may be made to the First United Methodist Church in Watsika. Thelma Ann Webster. Thelma Ann Webster, 87, of Houston, Texas, passed away on Monday, October 5, 2020, at Houston Methodist Wilbur Hospital. Visitation will be held on Monday, October 12, 2020, from noon to 1 p.m. Funeral services at the First United Methodist Church in Watsika. Pastor Kara Berg will officiate. Burial will follow at Prairie Dell Cemetery in Iroquois. Memorials may be made to the Lakewood United Methodist Church Shepherd's Ministry. We return to the news with a story entitled, Christ Lutheran High School Student Wins Americanism Essay Contest. Deanna Oxier, a student at Christ Lutheran High School in Buxley, took first place in a recent essay contest. The American Legion, Department of Illinois, American Legion Auxiliary, and Sons of the American Legion sponsored the contest. The aim of the contest is to aid the schools in Illinois in teaching Americanism and good citizenship. The class was divided into three classes, Class 1, 7th and 8th grade, Class 2, 9th and 10th grades, and Class 3, 11th and 12th grades. All Illinois students in 7th and 8th grades, as well as high school, were invited to participate in the contest. Oxier took first place in the Class 2 contest and won a $200 cash award for her essay. She received her award via mail this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.